Hey guys, before we get into the episode, you all know I'm a huge fan of fashion, and I have been ever since I was a little girl. And my first job, by the way, was actually at Macy's. And my love for fashion began when I started there because I worked in the fragrance department, but of course, my eye was always on the clothes and the makeup and everything related to style. But here's the thing, my relationship with Macy's didn't end once my days of asking people walking by if they wanted to sample the latest scents came to an end. Nearly 20 years later, I still find myself choosing Macy's time and time again for literally everything. It's become a really beautiful full circle moment that they've been such amazing supporters of our show for so long. And when it comes to shopping, they have everything you need. Whether I need a last minute outfit or Kevin needs a last minute outfit for our friend's wedding, we always head to Macy's. They've got us covered. So if you're in need of some retail therapy, perhaps, or looking to spruce up your home or your lifestyle, check out Macy's, friends. I've curated a list of some of my favorite items that have helped me upgrade so many parts of my life. Really my fashion the most, but of course home and baby and so much more. So check the link in the description and happy shopping, Hill Squad.
I'm on a journey to heal and get better in all areas of life, and I want to do it with you. Welcome to Heal Squad by Maria Menounos, where we improve and heal all parts of our lives, most importantly, our health. Heal Squad by Maria Menounos, your life improvement series starts now.
Well, yeah. We love the book, and I was raving as we started about Cade's forward. It made me feel so ashamed of my forwards I've ever done because he killed it.
He killed it, didn't he?
He did. Well, I was underlining his things as if it was his book and I was learning from him.
That is my guy, man. To be such a young kid and to have such wisdom is absolutely amazing. That's why I chose him.
So he did a great cool. Job. Yeah, no, really yeah. was great. And you know, I think the line that I grabbed this morning was, greatness means taking time to block out what everyone else wants for me and instead focus on who I want to be.
That's Cade.
And
that's Cade.
I don't know if that was a lesson that you taught him. Do you know?
No, we talk about those things all the time because he's always talking about, you know, I want to be a great basketball player, but more importantly, I want to develop myself as a great man, a great father, and what is that greatness? What does that mean? So we talk about those things all the time. So he's just kind of divulging his thoughts about that. Yeah.
Well, I loved that. And it spawned a whole conversation about different boundaries that I started to set after brain surgery so that I could stop living by the demands and requests of other people of my time and start living mine. Because I would see an entire day flow by and it was just playing Pac-Man, answering everybody's requests, and I would never get anything done that I needed to move forward.
That's right.
And that's right. I think a lot of us, especially women, get in that habit because we want to be the dependable, reliable one, the one that like is there for everybody, gets it all done, and we run ourselves into the ground, and then we're unfulfilled because we haven't done anything for ourselves.
That's right, and that's really what the book is focusing on is, hey, let's make sure that we're taking care of us. Let me make sure that I'm smiling at myself and I'm happy with where I am and where I'm headed. And I don't think we do a great job of it.
Yeah.
I think we do a great job of satisfying everybody else and other people, but then we're left unfulfilled. And then we complain about being unfulfilled and pouring all of our energy into other spaces and other people. I think that's backwards. We've got to flip that back around.
Yeah. So what inspired you to write this?
Well, I think the book almost wrote itself. So really what those 40 conversations with self are things that I was asking people in therapy. So I'm doing therapy with clients and I'm asking these series of questions. And then the session's over and I would start to go away and ask myself, what would I say? How would I answer that? And from that, I started to utilize that idea of, you know, this may be beneficial to others that need to almost rediscover themselves. So it kind of stemmed from my therapy and found its way into my first book.
So cool. I love it. And I was underlining like crazy. So what are Let's see. Let's go back into what I marked here. The first question is obviously the most important question. Who is the most important person in your life? And I was reading to everybody, you know, you may think it's, you know, your spouse or your grandmother who took care of you and did so much to sacrifice, but it's you.
Yes.
How do you impress upon people that they are the most important person in their life and break the barriers and fears of narcissism and selfishness and all of that? How do you get that through?
Yeah, I think fundamentally, the first way I do it is to ask that fundamental question. Who is the most important person in your life, or who knows you best? Those first couple of questions are critical to this move that the book is asking us to take. Because what it does, that curiosity, that line of questioning kind of forces reflection, like, well, who does know me best? And people, so I know, Maria, you probably have read parts of it, but when I ask people the question, who knows you best, they quickly say, well, my wife or my friend or my grandmother or those people that you named earlier. But there's no way that can be true, because to be clear, my wife knows me really well, but let's also be clear. There are many things that my wife will never, ever, ever know about me, and I'm going to make sure of that.
What do you mean?
She doesn't need to know certain stories about my past that I don't need. And to be clear, there's stories in her past that she's not going to share with me.
Whoa.
So the only person that knows all the stories of Corey is Corey. I'm the only one that knows all the stories. So everybody else has a portion of me. They have a piece, and some larger than others. But no one has the full story except for the man in the mirror. So recognizing that, that's not selfish. That's just truthful. So if we can begin with that cornerstone of understanding, then we can move into a better frame or perspective on who we are, how we came to be, and where we're headed. Mm-hmm. And that's what the book is asking. Be curious with yourself. Maybe for the first time, be curious with who you are and how you came to be. So that's really kind of how those first couple of questions came to be.
So if I was answering that question, I would say, Kevin knows me the best. And I say it all the time. I'm like, Kevin, can you help me? What, help me figure out, like, and so what does that mean when we are punting it to someone else to tell us who we are?
Well, what I would say is that probably Kevin is a person that is on your Supreme Court. So he sits on your Supreme Court that you turn to Kevin to say, I'm trying to figure this out. You know me really well. What do you think I should do? What do you think my response should be? So Kevin is a Supreme Court member, but he in no way knows all about you. Not everything. As I say that statement, you have things that run through your mind like, yep, he doesn't know that.
Yeah, no, of course. It's the first time, though, that's ever happened where you really, really realize, oh, he doesn't really know everything.
That's right. And that's okay, though. Yeah. I think that we have to come to the understanding that that's okay. That's how life is set up. And if we understand that no one else knows all of us except us, then why wouldn't I befriend myself in a deeper way? I should be the best friend to Corey before anyone else, because to be clear, before I can be a good husband, before I can be a good therapist, before I can be a good father, before I can be a good piston, I have to first be a good Corey to Corey before I can do any of those other things. Because if I'm a good Corey to Corey, I show up as a better version of myself than all those other spaces, because I understand myself. I know my boundaries. I know what my non-negotiables are. Because I've sat with myself and understood that. Now I can move with a deeper sense of the core of Corey, and other people will get a better version of that. I think that's simply, not to say that simple is easy, because simple can be very complex and hard, but it's really simple. And the book is written, as you know, mm-hmm. in a very simple way.
That's what
and
I
that
love
was purposeful.
About it.
Right? I did it. I mean, I could theorize and talk about all kinds of theory. I have a PhD from a Big Ten university. I can do that, but that's not helpful. My grandmother, who I write about in the book, used to always say, she had a 10-year-old education, went to the fifth grade. And she used to always say, whatever you do in life, make sure that you put things down where the goats can get it, baby. Where the goats can get it, down on the ground. What good does it help for me to pontificate about mm-hmm. these theories? And people are saying, I have to look up every other word. I have to look up. I don't really know exactly what he was saying. Well, that doesn't help anyone. So put it in a way that people can take bite-sized approaches to better understand yourself. And that's what the book is really hoping to do.
When you're on the go 24/7 like me, guys, finding ways to make life easier is so important for my health and sanity. And that's exactly what my friends at Macy's do for me. From working there as a teenager to now going to them for so many of my daily essentials, it's been my go-to for so many years. And having everything in one place is such a time saver for me. With being a first-time mom for a while now, as you know, I've had plenty of those, and being able to rely on them for all the things has been amazing. Plus, having everything in one place has made being a new mom just a little bit easier for me. So I know we're all focusing on our families, our health, hopefully, our jobs, and everything in between, but it's time to make your life a little easier. And to help you out, I've curated all of my essentials from Macy's for you and the whole fam. All the details are in the show notes below, or you can just click the link in the description to get your hands on them too. I have some new picks on there. This little bomber jacket, this little black dress. You're gonna love it. All right, friends, let's talk about something we all do. Snack. Trust me, I've definitely overindulged in the past, but as you know, I am focused on my health these days, and I think I found the healthier snack that you don't have to lose out on the flavor, and it's definitely become my go-to. It first came into the house because of Kevin. He was obsessed with Wonderful Pistachios, and then I got addicted, and now it's in my travel bag. I don't leave home without it. It's in our glove compartments because they don't melt. Right now, my favorite flavor is the sweet chili flavor. It feels like some of the naughtier kind of snacks I used to use, where I used to lick my fingers after. Now I lick them and I feel safer. Plus, Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. That's crazy, guys. So if you're looking for the perfect snack, trust me and head over to www.wonderfulpistachios.com to snag a bag of Wonderful Pistachios. You're gonna love them. I remember my mom always struggling with her hair. It's frizzy, Maria, my mom would say in her Greek accent. Τι έχεις? What do you have? I tried so hard to find her products. I wish I could share these products I'm using now with her because I know she would be so happy to finally have good hair days. I've always believed that hair is a woman's best accessory. And with Way's new anti-frizz cream, you can ensure that your hair always looks its best without the frizz stealing the spotlight. It's a lightweight cream that not only provides immediate frizz control, but also helps prevent heat damage. And get this, it lasts up to 72 hours. That's 3 whole days of frizz-free, gorgeous hair. Way seriously has some of my favorite products for taming the frizz. Pro tip, one of my biggest discoveries is using the Way hair oil on the ends of my hair before I dry it. Let me tell you, it's a game changer. Once it's dry, my hair looks so smooth and polished, I don't even need to do anything else. It is incredible. I love it. Frizz-free, up your schedule with Way. Go to the Way, theouai.com, and enter the promo code HEALSQUAD for 15% off any product. That's the Way, theouai.com, promo code HEALSQUAD. Trust me, you won't regret it. As a first-time mom with a baby, I'm always on the go, whether it's running errands, getting my coffee, going to doctor's appointments, or just spending quality time with little Athena. And that's why I rely on Wonderful Pistachios to keep me fueled and ready for anything, no matter where I am. Kevin even keeps a bag stashed in the nursery. You know, for the nighttime hunger moments. Wonderful Pistachios comes in a variety of flavors and sizes, making them the perfect snack to have literally any time, whether I'm enjoying them during a quick break in between taping this show, or I'm on the go and it's in the diaper bag. I do carry it in my travel bag and they're in my car. At this point, when I'm leaving the house, I think keys, wallet, Wonderful Pistachios. Bonus, Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts with 6 grams of protein in every 1 ounce serving. So on top of all that, they keep me feeling satisfied. I'm energized while I'm juggling all this crazy stuff in life. Next time you're looking for a convenient and guilt-free snack, head over to www.wonderfulpistachios.com and stock up on your favorite flavors today. Mine is the sweet chili. So if you don't have a relationship with yourself in that way, what are the best steps to take to develop?
Yeah, I think one of those initial steps is spending time with self. I think we won't do that because oftentimes, Maria, we get nervous to spend time with ourselves because we know that that person in the mirror knows all the secrets. Because I can BS you, Maria. You don't know me. I could tell you stories about this or that and how good things are, but you don't know when I end this call what's going on in my life, the struggles that I have. You don't know. So what we can do in life is BS everyone.
Including ourselves.
Well, including ourselves, but the only way we can BS ourselves is to not engage with self. So the book is saying, no, don't do that. Why would I do that to myself? Engage with self, understand, get in the mirror of your life. I think too often we look out the window of our lives, and the window of your life can say, be, oh my God, look at that situation. Well, that's so bad. And maybe I should send $100 to help that group or that. And that can be okay. But the mirror of our lives is really saying, so who are you in the context of that issue? If you're worried about racial unrest in our country, did you get in the mirror and figure out who you are in the context of race? Or do you ask yourself those questions? Because that's not easy. But really, it will produce a beautiful space if we can do it, if we can lean into it. So I challenge people to find ways to get into the mirror of their lives. And that's what the book is doing. Is a bite-sized approach to getting the mirror of your life.
Yeah, I mean, and the questions are the exercise, and is it really spending time alone?
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it, because if you spend that time alone, you'll get to better know yourself, and then you get to move into the world playing and practicing with in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
So spending time with yourself, critically important, but then you have to move that into the world. And now you're showing up as a different person, and you'll start to recognize, man, I wouldn't have done that before.
Yeah,
I didn't see it that way because I hadn't done this work. So I think it's a both and approach. Do the individualized work, but then move that into the broader spectrum. Especially, I think, the social networks that we're a part of. I think too often we try to change the world. We want to change the world. And that's a beautiful thing to think about, but it doesn't really work that way. How about if I change the social networks, the people that know me? That network may be small, but I have influence in that network. I don't have influence with people that I'll never meet necessarily. I may not get much influence there, but I get to influence my social network. So do the individualized work and then move that into your social network and see if you can impact that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like when you're alone, you start to butt up against the issues that need adjusting or tension. So if you travel alone and you find that you can't just be without being on your phone, then there's stuff there that you have to look at. Or if you don't want to go out to eat alone, or so what is it? Like, you start to kind of see where things are rather than assuming, or and then you can kind of start to address it. So like, I went to a meditation event alone recently. It was the first time I traveled alone to something like that. I usually would go with a buddy, and it was magical because I knew in that moment I needed to do more of this, and I needed to start getting comfortable with that kind of experience. And anytime something felt weird or uncomfortable, I'm like, noted, this is something that needs to be worked on. And I would catch it. But you can't catch those things if your schedule's filled and if you have lots of people around and you're not putting yourself in these different kind of environments.
And I think subconsciously we may set our lives up in such a way that we don't want to do that work. We don't want to spend time with ourselves. So if I stay busy and am helping everyone else, I can almost tell an untruth to myself. I talk about that in the book. Jean-Paul Sartre. So now here I'm going to theorize. I just said I wasn't. Jean-Paul Sartre, who was an existentialist, wrote about a concept called bad faith. And bad faith really is just saying that we tell ourselves these lies over and over. For instance, I'll say, I can never leave this job. I hate it, but it pays the bill, so I can never leave this job. That's absolutely not true. And you know it fundamentally and foundationally not to be true. But if you tell yourself that story enough, you'll believe I can't leave the job. It's just not possible for me.
Mm-hmm.
So finding ways to play with that untruth, and you said, note it. Like, hey, let me note that I think I BS'd myself there. You can't do this, or you can't do that. Maybe I could, and should I play with that more? So I think this concept of noting, as you just stated, is critically important to our deeper understanding of self.
Yeah, absolutely. There was something I loved that you said in the book about in your process of this, is that you will literally sit in your living room and not answer the door with people fully ringing the doorbell and seeing you sitting in there.
Yes.
I mean, what a practice, you know, because I know when the doorbells just keep ringing and ringing, I get so anxiety or stress. I'm like, oh my God, enough. Why does everybody want to ring the doorbell today? But to get comfortable with not answering it, ooh, that's a good one.
So let's be clear on this. When the phone rings, it is just an indication that someone would like to speak to you. That doesn't mean that I must answer the phone.
Write that down.
It's just telling me someone on the other end wants to say something, engage with me, ask me questions, offer an opportunity. But I may not be in the space that's what I need right now. So the phone, I'm going to let the phone ring. I'm going to decline the call because I don't need that right now. I'll get the message. I'll call them back. But I don't, that's not what I'm in need of. I'm spending time with myself. So to sit, the practice of sitting in my living room, in my sacred space, a chocolate leather chair that I have in my living room at home in Minneapolis. And literally the chair is positioned in such a way that you can look right in my door and see me sitting there. So the doorbell rings and I literally will look at the person and turn back and stay in my space. And usually people won't ring the doorbell twice. If they see you look at them and look away, they take the hint of, oh, well, they're not trying to talk to me right now. So is that selfish? I don't see that as selfish. I see that as me making sure that I take care of me first. I don't want to go talk to you about what you have to sell. That's not what I'm doing today. Tomorrow, if you ring the doorbell, I may answer that because I can deal with that. But today I'm not doing that. So I tell my wife, I have a place here in Detroit and Minneapolis is home. So I'm away from home a lot. So I'll tell my wife when I feel myself kind of things starting to build to a point of being overwhelmed, I need a Corey day.
I love exactly, that too. Oh my God.
Yes. She knows exactly what that means. And she no longer takes that as an off-putting statement.
Mm-hmm.
That Corey needs his space. He's just saying he needs his space.
How did she get there, though? Because I wanted to teach my husband to do this because when I read it, I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Kevin needs to do this. But, you know, I'm still going to be sad when I just he's like, you just think I'm a toy. You just want to play with me all the time. I'm like, you're my best friend. Like, I want to be with you.
And Carrie's my best. My wife is my best friend. So I'm close. But she now understands through the process. So I didn't start off by saying I need a Corey day, just shut it off. I started saying, damn, honey, I need some time. I've got so much going on. I just need to be still, not take any calls. So I didn't just jump in and say, I want to do this and this is how we're going to move forward. Kind of set it up by explaining to her, feeling overwhelmed. I need a moment. God, I don't know where I'm going to get it. I have to figure it out. And then something came to me to say, you need a Corey day, dummy. You need a day for you that just allows you to be still with you, right? That your true best friend is you. So you need to be with your best friend today. No one else. Because there's moments that I will tell everyone else, my kids included, mom and I need time to just hang. Just mom and I. Don't interrupt us. We're going out. We're going to dinner. We're going to a hotel. We just need time. Don't call us. If there's something that's an emergency, here's what you need to do. Contact someone else. We need our time. But we won't do that with ourselves. So the process of explaining to my wife that need of self time for self and reflective space, she came to understand that. So now we call it a Corey day. And if I say that to her, she registers quickly. And not only does she know I'm going to let Corey have his space, she'll warn everyone in my circle. Hey, Corey's kind of checking out today. He needs some time. Feeling like he got a lot going on. The book's coming out. The season just started. He's just kind of needing some time. So not only will she understand it, but she'll help me with my social network. And it's been beneficial.
That's so cool. Kevin has his thing where he isn't doing it now because he's eating better, but his thing was, if you see him in bed with the bowl of cereal, he's out. Don't talk to him. Don't ask him for anything. The night is over. And and I would turn into bratty daughter mode where he's like, is this what our kids are going to be like?
I love it.
Yeah, I was totally testing his limits.
But Maria, that's a version of what a Corey day, you guys are already practicing. You're already doing it. But so what I would add to that, the icing on that cake, that's a beautiful cake. The icing on that is to be intentional about it. not just happenstance and just happens I walk in, he's got a bowl of cereal, a bowl of ice cream in the bed, and it's telling me he kind of needs it. So how can he do that in an intentional way?
Yeah.
That I don't even need the bowl of ice cream to trigger, hey, I just need some space here.
But sweetheart. Everybody has so much guilt. Bit. How do you get people over the guilt?
Let's not get it twisted. That guilt is fully self-imposed. If I have guilt, I took that on. I took on that guilty feeling. So working to understand, I don't have to take that on. That's a mechanism that has been taught to us. I feel guilty that I didn't answer the door. I don't. You can feel it. If that's what you want to do, you go right ahead. I don't feel guilty about that. I don't feel guilty about it, Corey Day, because I'm not going to put that on myself. Let others do that work. If you choose to do that, you go right ahead. But I'm choosing something different. So that choice in that guilt space is something that we have to learn. Mm-hmm. Because we've learned that behavior, we have to unlearn that behavior. And it's hugely helpful.
Yeah. I think, you know, with spouses, it lets the air out of the balloon when someone is, giving you the permission to have that, right? So there was a moment recently, Kevin was super overwhelmed. I'm like, honey, just go away. Just go get a cabin, go do something and get out of here. And it just took the air out of the balloon and he felt so much better. He didn't even need to go after. Like, it helped so much. And I know with me sometimes, he'll say, hey, you know, if I'm going somewhere, do you want to just do this drive alone? Because he knows I love driving with the top down and just breathing. And is this something you want to do by yourself? And I'm like, yeah. I want to do this ride alone, or I'll say, no, you can come. Or so we kind of do it. But I think the Corey Day really inspired me because I'm now realizing how much alone time I need and how much rejuvenation I get from it. And he's always known it. I was very foreign to it. But I think it's something we all need to really practice.
So you talk about that permission giving. Someone gives you permission, right? Even when Kevin asks you, hey, do you want to just go alone? That gives you permission. Like, oh, it feels good because I got permission. I would say, let's make sure that we can give ourselves that permission. Kevin doesn't need to ask me if I want to go alone. If I'm already saying, man, this would feel really good to kind of do it alone. But if Kevin wants to go, I'll let him go. But I would love to do it by myself. So how about we just take the step of saying, hey, Kevin, I'm going to right up over here. I'm going to kind of drop the top and I'm going to do it by myself today. And what is he going to say? Enjoy that, sweetheart. Mm-hmm. Enjoy that time. I know you need that. Enjoy it. So you didn't even ask for permission. You gave yourself permission. And now what you did was notify those significant people that that's what you were up to. Mm-hmm. I think it's something we should practice.
Yeah. I have a question since you are obviously of such a growth mindset. Right. And so many of our listeners in this Heal Squad are growing and trying so hard to grow. When your spouse isn't 100% in the same wavelength as if they're behind in their growth, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. They're on the journey, but they're not caught up to you. How do you handle that dynamic? How do you advise people to handle that dynamic?
Well, I think that we have to find the chutzpah, the gumption, to be able to hold those conversations with people that we love and care about. That, hey, I'm getting a sense of feeling. We may not be exactly in the same space. And guess what, babe? That's okay. It's okay. But I want to verbalize that. This is, again, moving with intentionality. We don't want to be reactionary in life. And I think that's what we do a lot. We react, right? I think the flip of reactionary is intentionality. That if we can move with intention is saying, all right, I don't think that we're on the same page or we're not in the same growth space and it doesn't feel quite right. And I'm not trying to tell you that you need to catch up with me or I need to slow down. I'm just verbalizing it because if we verbalize it, then we can do something about it. Because if we're not talking about it, I don't know that you feel like I'm not growing at the same. I thought we were on the same page. So no one said anything. Now in my head, I'm saying she's not growing with me in the same rate and it doesn't feel good, but I'm not going to say it. Well, how am I going to fix it? How are we going to change that? If no one's saying anything, you're thinking one thing, I'm thinking another. No one discusses it. Now what it does is build and fester itself until it boils over to a point where it turns into a blow up situation where you have not grown with me over the last 3 years. And I've been waiting for you. You didn't say anything about that. No one talked to you. You didn't tell me that. If you'd have told me that, I could have adjusted. But now we're in a point where we're now contemptuous. You've now said something to me that you can never take back. My grandmother used to say, baby, when you squeeze that toothpaste out, you cannot put it back in. Those words are toothpaste. So, and you can imagine, you squeeze that toothpaste out and try to put it back in, it's messy. It's never going to be, the tube is never going to be the same. So once you say those things that may be contemptuous, you're not growing with me, it's now set in stone. Now it's there forever. Mm. So before we get to that point, how about we discuss it? How about we put some things on the table? I think we can benefit from that.
I love that. Yeah, it inspired me when you were saying, you know, you had to explain to your wife and she finally kind of got it. It's like, you know, those are the conversations that are hard for people to even, you know, consider having.
Yes, but let's recognize another thing, that anytime we feel discomfort, we will lean away because we don't want discomfort for the sake of discomfort or pain. I hate it. I don't want it. Get it away from me. But if we reframe that and say, this discomfort could be an indication that I'm growing. Oh, now all of a sudden I may lean into the pain. I may lean into the discomfort because it's telling me, hey, you're growing into a new space. It's what you wanted. It's not supposed to feel great the whole way through. But what we know on the other side is beauty, that the labor pains that a woman goes through is an indication that you're about to, the most beautiful thing in the world is on its way. And it hurts. It does not feel good. But I know something's coming. I'll deal with this because I know in a few hours, a few minutes, that I'm going to birth something that I'll love forever. So I'll deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think in life, it's very similar, right? That we want to lean into the pain. And the only way to really do that is to see that as an opportunity to grow, for growth. That something's coming, that I'm seeking something. It doesn't feel good now, but if I just stay with it and lean into it, something beautiful may be well on the way.
Yeah. I've seen that pattern in my life. Whenever things get a little like that, I just see it. I'm like, oh, that's my kind of trigger to know there's another, like a portal. It's a portal to the next level.
Portal.
You know? That. And so
I'm still in that.
Yeah. I teach portal. Kelsey that all the time. I'm like, things are going to be easy. I always look at it like a video game. So Super Mario Brothers, I go ancient, you know, level one, we finally figure out how to get through level one. We just step on the mushroom and get the extra points. We do whatever. And then it's like, oh my God, now I can do level one so easily. Well, then you get to level two and it's like, oh shit. I didn't know that bogey was coming. I didn't know. Oh, yes. And so there's a lot of discomfort again. And then you master that. And then you go to the next level. So when I tell Kelsey, as she's growing, I'm like, you're going to grow. And then it's going to be, whew, okay, I got this. And then all of a sudden you're not going to got it. And that's a good thing because then that means you have another level to go to. And you're going to that next level. You just got to keep playing through.
So if someone told you that you're going to have to fail 49 times for that 50th time success is there, you would rush to fail.
Yeah.
You'd rush to fail.
Yeah.
Oh, let's get this failure out of the way. Because on the 50th time, oh my God, something's there. I think life is the same way.
Yep.
Hey, let's get through this failure. I use a quote from Nelson Mandela. I live by this quote. And he said, in life, we never lose. We either win or we learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple, very simple. But instead of looking at the negativity or things that don't go the way we want them as just loss, no, that's an opportunity for us to grow. My Piston squad is 1-3. So we started off rough. So just was talking to a number of our players last night. We lost last night. Said, hey, so what good does it do for us to lose these games? If we don't learn, we don't get better from that loss, then we'll be doomed to continue to repeat it. Mm-hmm. Keep turning the ball over. Keep doing the same thing because we didn't learn from it. So learn from it. And that doesn't mean we won't make mistakes, but maybe we'll make different mistakes. I don't want to keep making The same mistake, right? In life, quite similar, I believe.
Yeah. Well, my favorite quote, well, two of them, obviously the Rocky Balboa quote, it ain't about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. I live by that. But the other one is by my favorite wrestler, Mr. Bob Backlund. And he said, you never lose unless you quit.
True.
And it's so true. You never lose unless you quit.
Yeah.
Now, yes. I'm not saying you can't quit anything in your life. There are things that you should, you know, you make good decisions about and say, this isn't for me or whatever. That's fine. But you never really lose unless you quit. So when I was dreaming as a, you know, little girl of immigrant parents in Boston cleaning nightclubs, when I was dreaming of my life and my career, I would visualize a ladder and I would see myself climbing this ladder and I would see people up ahead of me and they would make poor choices. And I was going to just keep making good choices and being a good person and doing the right thing. And I was going to keep climbing that ladder. And so I knew that there was no way to fail if I pitched a good game, if I just did all the right things, worked hard, was a good person. There was no way I wouldn't win in life if I did that.
Let me ask you. So you said when you were a little girl, you would visualize the ladder. So that sounds like a past practice.
Yeah.
Do you still do it? Do you still do it?
No. And that's a problem.
Why?
I don't know.
Why would you not? Why would you stop? That helped you. That spurred you into all kinds of success. So that, I think that's the mistake we make.
100%.
Stop being imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I ever stop visualizing that ladder that helped me get to space A and B and C? And then we start to get to spaces and we say, all right, I guess I don't need to do that anymore. But we're not done.
Nope.
You're not done, right? This is the beginning of the rest of your life today, right here, this moment that we're in. The only moment that we truly have is this current moment. What happened 3 minutes ago is gone forever. What's going to happen 3 minutes from now is yet to be seen. The only truth that we have and the only reality that we sit in is this moment. So how engaging with that latter visualization on a continual basis,
yeah,
is critically important. But somebody sells us a bill of goods that says, well, once you get to a certain point, you don't, why would you imagine anymore?
Well, the stories that seep in are, well, how much more do you want? And they make you feel greedy for wanting more. And those were the things that I think stopped the latter process. I think also life hits and, you know, I was pretty Teflon, but they even got to me. And I think that at some point, all of those things accumulate and you get worn down and then you also have the stories of like, wow, I'm being greedy for wanting more. All of that becomes this recipe for stuck.
But listen though, why I'm gonna listen to someone else that may be envious about where I am, that wants me to stop? Yeah, you got enough. You got enough, Corey. So many people told me my dream of working in the NBA or the NFL with players therapeutically was too big of a dream. Why not just get a PhD and then work as a professor? That's a great job. You'll be great. The students will learn from you. That wasn't my dream, though. That's your, hey, that's cool for someone else. That's not what I want. I have dreams, and I'm going to keep pushing and pressing. I'm going to keep climbing that ladder. And that's not greedy. Mm-hmm. Success is not about greed. Shouldn't be about greed. Success, it should be about a process. I want to be better today than I was yesterday. Because
mm-hmm.
if I'm not, what's the point in all of this? If I'm not better, a better version of Corey today than I was yesterday, I have missed the mark. So that means I'm still moving. And until the last breath I take, I'm going to keep moving. I say all the time, in life, we must be rivers, not ponds. A pond is stagnant. Stagnant water just sits there. It can get nasty and messy. But a river is ever regenerating, ever flowing and moving and evolving. I seek to be a river. I want to keep moving. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop. Now, I don't know if that means I didn't imagine that I would write this book and I didn't know if I'll get to the NFL and all. But I'm going to keep pushing and we'll see where it goes. If this is the limit, then so be it. But if it's not, I'm going to keep rolling.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think This show has been my kind of guide back to myself because I get to have these great conversations every day. And the meditations I do every day are specifically envisioning my life and my dreams. So I do it every single day now. But for a very long period, I didn't know why I was stuck. And then I realized, oh, well, I stopped dreaming. I stopped believing that I was deserving of more. And I know I'm not the only one that has those feelings or conversations or has had those feelings. So I think what I'll take away from today is that maybe I throw back the ladder. And even though I have a different version of what I do now, but the ladder is going to come back too.
That's good. And realizing in life that there is, I hope I never arrive. I don't want to arrive. I want to keep moving. I want to keep going. I don't want an arrival. Okay, I've arrived. Because what do? We get complacent if we think we've arrived.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm here. Got to the NBA. I can just, that was the dream. No, I'm going to reassert myself. What's the new dream?
Yep.
I'm looking around like, hey, there's got to be more. So what's next? What do I want to do? I don't know what it is, but I'm going to look for it. I don't want to arrive. I don't want the complacency and the comfort of arrival. I seek discomfort.
That's what I was going to bring you back to. I was going to bring you back to the discomfort because that's why if you want more, you have to get used to and comfortable with being uncomfortable because that's when you know the growth is happening. That's when you know you're on your way to the next level of Super Mario Brothers.
When I grow up, I want to be like you. When I grow up, I want to be like you. I'm working on it. That's a full-time job, but I'm going to be like you.
Like me?
That's good stuff. Yes, like you.
You're so
cute.
That's
a beautiful... Right? That process is a thing of beauty. Keep Thank rolling. You. Don't stop.
Yeah.
Don't stop.
It's so fun when you can start to see the patterns like that. I think that that's really, really special because then you know, like even now, this morning I had a moment and I got these real strong chills and I'm starting to identify the pattern of the chills with kind of psychic moments. And I'm like, ooh, that's a new pattern that I'm realizing. Okay, now I can grab onto that. But those things only come when you give yourself some space to identify them, right? Yes. So I learned the discomfort led to a portal to my next level. I'm now learning certain emotions and feelings are indications of things that are a knowing that I feel and have.
Yeah.
But that's getting to know yourself, which is why I love this book, because you start to really get to know yourself through this because you're asking all the right questions. I'm a journalist. And so you've got to ask the right questions to get the answer. Yeah. And right. So,
and open-ended questions, right? If you can open, the more open-ended you can, you're going to get more of a response. If you say, do you like this or that? Well, I can just say this and I'm done. So tell me what it is that you like and why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, people have to expand and expound upon something. And I think that's the beauty of life, right? I think that's exciting for me.
I love it. I'm going to go to the booth, Kelsey. What are your questions?
You know, I had one that this has been really hard for me. And I know you wrote, this is one of the questions in the book, talking about that inner voice, kind of that inner dialogue. And I feel like that's something that you also talk about a lot about awareness in the book. That's something that I recently have become so aware about how negative my inner voice is. And I think a lot of us struggle with that and struggle with knowing how to change that. And I don't know if it is something you necessarily change, but I wanted your help and opinion on that.
Yeah, it is something you can change. You're talking about the concept of self-talk.
Yeah.
That as I'm talking, I don't have to wonder if Maria is talking to herself because she is. She's, well, what's the next question? Should I go to the booth next? Right? There's a conversation that's always happening. So that means that we have much more influence on ourselves than all the people in our lives combined that will talk to us. We talk to ourselves more than everyone in our lives combined. So if that is the case, tuning into if that talk is usually negative or positive is critically important. What you'll find oftentimes is I'm negative with myself. And the nastiness in that is if I took those negative things that I say to myself about myself and gave a script of negativity that I say to myself to someone else and said, hey, say these things to me, would I remain friends with them? Hell no, I wouldn't. I would be seeking to get away from them. But we do it to ourselves all day, every day. So what we need to do is see our mindset, our thinking those conversations that we have with ourselves as an echo chamber. And that echo chamber can be filled with negativity. But what you can do with that echo chamber is begin to put positivity in to push that negativity out of the echo chamber. So if you're aware of your self-talk, and most people are not, it's just happening all the time, but you don't tune into it. So first of all, let's become aware. All right, what am I saying to myself? Oh, that's not good. All right, so what do I want to do now that I'm aware? I want to change that little by little. The African proverb, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Hmm. One bite at, so you don't try to change it all. I'm not trying to change all my self-talk to positive overnight. But little by little, I'm just going to replace some of that negativity with positivity. And as you go, you'll start to find, man, I'm starting to be more positive with myself. And what we know, the more positive I am with my self-talk, the more positive outcomes I'll have in life. Pretty simple. Doesn't mean it's easy, but relatively simple. So that is the work. Become aware of it. It sounds like that's what you did. And now start to change it little by little.
Thank you. So helpful. I like that. I like that adding the little bit of positive, because I think that it, we, and I know you and I talked about this briefly, it's like it can be so overwhelming when so many people are telling you to do so many things and there's so many solutions out there, and then you're paralyzed and you do nothing. So it's like that little bit, those little baby steps, like you said, eating just a little bit of the elephant. It's not the whole thing. So thank you. Right. Love that.
Well, good stuff. I feel like your aha moment hits with the right message and the right time and the right person. So it may not have happened yet, and it may have just happened now. I know for me, the meditations I started earlier this year with Dr. Joe Dispenza. Are you familiar with him, Dr. Yeager?
No.
Dr. Joe Dispenza, I think you would love him. So when he started making me aware of my thoughts and how much weight our thoughts carry and how we're the creators of our lives and our thoughts have such a huge impact, I would, in the morning, in the shower, every day, be conscious of what was coming in, and I would catch it with a mitt, like a baseball player. I would literally catch the thought, and I would say, you know, does it serve me? And I'm like, nope. And I would release it. And then I would say, what do I want to think? And how do I want to feel? And I would do what you're saying. Basically, I would replace it with, where do I want to go? So I would take the negative thoughts or the negative talk, catch them, throw them out, and redirect to where I wanted to go. And that became a habit eventually, to a point where I was like, oh, I've really shifted what comes inside here. And that really is making me so much happier. And it makes a lightness and a float kind of vibe for yourself that you start to have. And then everything is possible. And then everything starts clicking and everything starts happening. But it really starts with your self-talk and your thoughts.
100%. And you did it little by little. Catching it is about that awareness. I have to be aware. So I can't catch it if I don't know what's happening. So if I'm aware, all of a sudden I start to catch it. And not only did you catch it, but you said, okay, let me look at that. Does that serve me? Is that good for me? No, it's not. All right, I'm tossing that. And when I toss it, what do I replace that with? Mm-hmm. Some level, some version of positivity that will serve me. So we should be in the business of serving ourselves. There's a song by Tony Jones, and the name of the song is Energy Budget.
Ooh.
It's an absolutely beautiful concept. That I have to budget my energy. Budgeting my energy. Where will I give my energy? Where do I choose to give it? And part of that is catching those negative thoughts and turning them into positive and figuring out, all right, so Kevin, I can give you this much energy because I have the energy to give. I think one of the struggles that we have in life is that we seek to pour everyone's glass full. But if I look at my glass, it's only a quarter filled. It's only partially filled. That's a mistake. I need mine filled all the way to the top. And once it's full, anything left you got, you can have it. Everyone else can have it. But I have to fill mine first. How silly is it that I'm pouring your glass full and I have a fourth of a glass? Yep. It doesn't even make sense if we think about it.
And yet that's what everybody does. That's what we all do.
Yes. I'm not doing that. I'm not in that business any longer. That's just an old business, and other people can be in that business. That's cool. I'm not going to be in that business.
I
want my glass filled, and anything left, I'll give it to you readily and gladly.
That's so cool. I've come up with a new one recently where it's like, is this loving for me? You know, is this something that's loving for me? If it isn't loving for me, then I'm not going to do it. And I ask myself at the end of the night, what did I do that was loving towards myself today? And what did I do that was maybe not so loving towards myself? So I can take stock of where I need to make adjustments. And so it's a similar thing with the glass. I can't wait for my husband to hear this interview because his glass is always empty. And I don't know where he finds the reserves to pour. He's like probably, was it Robin Hood that stole from the rich and gave to the poor?
Gave to the poor, yeah.
I think that's what he is. He's like an energy Robin Hood.
You should listen to that song, Energy Budget. You'll love it.
I will.
You'll absolutely love it, yes.
I want to ask you about, you talk about the difference between treatment and healing, and I really want you to share that with everybody before we wrap out.
Yeah. So treatment, I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'll be brief, and I could not, I could expand on this for a while, but treatment and healing is something that I think we should do a better job of differentiating between. So for instance, metaphorically, if you cut your arm wide open, what you'll do is go to the doctor and they will look at it and say, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna clean it out. Then we're gonna put this ointment in and then we're gonna sew it up. So it's all treatment, very important, critically important. But the body will then go about the job of healing that wound. The body will do it. So all healing must come from within, cannot come from outside. It must come from within the individual, within the community. All healing must come from within. So do we seek treatment? My work is treatment work. The therapist, I do treatment. But I get to help facilitate the healing in you. But I realize and recognize that that must come from you, that I can't give you healing. I cannot heal you. I can help facilitate that healing in you. So recognizing that, I think, is an important distinction that will help us. Go seek that treatment if that's what you are in need of, but realize that you have everything within you to heal yourself. So that's that differentiation I think is really important.
I love it. Well, we definitely have enough to talk about for like a part two and a part three. So hopefully you'll come back. In the meantime, we'll put everything Dr. Corey Yeager in the summary of this episode so you can find the book, How Am I Doing?, and anything else that you need to know about Dr. Corey. Thank you so much for this today. This was amazing.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast and all related content published or distributed by or on behalf of Maria Menounos or MariaMenounos.com is for informational purposes only and may include information that is general in nature and that is not specific to you. Any information or opinions expressed or contained herein are not intended to serve as or replace medical advice, nor to diagnose, prescribe, or treat any disease, condition, illness, or injury, and you should consult the healthcare professional of your choice regarding all matters concerning your health, including before beginning any exercise, weight loss, or healthcare program. If you have or suspect you may have a healthcare emergency, please contact a qualified healthcare professional for treatment. Any information or opinions provided by a guest expert or host featured within website or on company's podcast are their own, not those of Maria Menounos or the company. Accordingly, Maria Menounos and the company cannot be responsible for any results or consequences or actions you may take based on information or opinions.
Hey, Heal Squad, we have been on quite the journey together, and we're hearing from so many of you just how much this show is helping you heal and get better, and it makes us feel so good. We love, love, love it, and we just ask that you don't keep it to yourself. Spread the message and share the show or your favorite episode with your friends, and if you want to help us even more, you can leave us a 5-star rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and follow us on Instagram at Heal Squad. You can also DM us anytime because we love connecting with you. And finally, you can also join us on Patreon for our monthly live heal events with world-class healers and ad-free episodes exclusive only to Patreon and our Super Heal Squad for as little as $10 a month. So go to patreon.com/healsquad to join. Getting better isn't easy, friends, but as I say all the time, it's a whole lot easier if we can do it together. We love you all so much, and we love doing this thing called life with you.